Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to discuss the offense from that Broncos game. Obviously, this is the more difficult discussion of the week. We had a great talk about the defense, all happy and up notified, except when we're talking about the injuries, of course. But here to talk about the offense with me is Coach DC. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And you did select me apparently for the most difficult segment. So thank you two times.
Probably of the whole year, honestly, Coach, because we're hitting it at the wrong time. Before we get into this, though, let me thank our sponsor, Liquid Death, the water that will brutally murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been good to us. But let's get back to the topic of the day, which is the Lamar sprained PCL came out today. What do you take from that? Have you had players who have had that sort of injury before?
Yeah, and myself is included as well. Mine was a tear. And with PCLs, what I know about it, and you may have some listeners, I'm quite sure you will, who probably know a little bit more, who maybe even do work. Mine was not repaired. I just did physical therapy, but it was a tear. It was a tear. It was like a 30% tear, and I was allowed to continue competing because at one time, believe it or not, I actually did, compete in sports. But what I know about sprains of a PCL is that it's typically what I thought was 2 to 6 weeks, but that's not what I'm hearing now about Lamar. It may have been a less intense, sprain. But immediately when I saw his knee get jammed into the ground, I thought PCL, because what I know of it, the way I've had it explained to me, is it's an accident. It's a ligament injury that's typically seen in car accidents when people are not wearing their seatbelt and their knee jams into the dash as they slam on the brakes, and your femur or whatever that bone is called is unable to move, but your shin bone moves backwards. So stressing the ligament backwards sucks, but especially because it occurred at the end of the quarter. And so we were also confused when they came back for that first play of the second quarter. I know you were there, right?
Yep.
So you saw it, but those of us watching on TV were confused about what's going on here. Why is he not on the field?
They don't often announce things like that, but they actually announced it over the public address system. Your attention, please. Tyler Huntley now playing quarterback for the Ravens, kind of thing.
Right.
It's not a good feeling to have. And obviously, then we noticed the tent is up. And then the next thing we noticed was a bunch of camera people moving quickly down the sideline and go, okay, wait a minute. And then you from the front of the camera people from the back. The camera people are all trailing Lamar down the stairs, basically. And oh no. And it's just one of these things. I get very depressed when this kind of thing happens, angry, depressed, probably go through all the five stages at some point, but it's a eerily similar situation to last season. When you get right down to it, you've got Fa'alele at left tackle and McCary both subbing in for Stanley again, which is, by the way, not much better than Alejandro Villanueva, but probably worse, the combination of those two. And then you have Huntley in again for Lamar, and everything has to change about this offense.
Yeah. It's tough to see because, as a huge Lamar fan, I wasn't a huge Lamar fan in college. It's not that I didn't like him. I didn't watch college football like that. I was still coaching. So I was busy. But when he got drafted and then hearing him talk, I just became a fan. And it's unfortunate because now it allows a certain narrative to continue, like, oh, he's a running quarterback. Running quarterbacks are going to get hurt. Well, both times he's been hurt in the last 2 years has been on pass plays, where either, moving out of the pocket or, a sack from the backside in this case. So that's just unfortunate. And it's frustrating for everybody because we were all hoping for, and still are hoping for, him to come out on the other side of this challenging year, with some kind of outcome, some kind of heroic outcome, if you're like me and you still believe in heroes. So hopefully he can come back and, I doubt if we see him in the next two games. Me personally, I've seen a couple of kids with PCL sprains, and for our experience, it was a month. We did have one student play an entire year without a PCL at all. Because he's just senior, 5'7", 155, but lightning bug kid who you could put in your room that I see right now in your background, and we wouldn't be able to lay hands on him. And he played an entire year without one because he knew that was going to be his last year playing football. He was never going to play in college. So and he ran for 1,500 yards and 22 touchdowns. So
there you go. There's a year. By the way, need to congratulate your team. Why don't we do that on here? Here.
Yeah, those guys at Decatur that, you know, I know some people who are involved with on an everyday basis. I'm not one of them, but they had a heck of a year and went up there and played Milford Mill and gave them a scare. I think they were leading up until the last minute of the game, and Milford Mill, and you know, was able to go down and get a touchdown. So it was a great game. I think 40-33, and then Milford Mill went on and won the state title. So awesome show put on by Milford Mill and Decatur. And, you know, our guys were hoping to pull out the win, but Milford Mill is obviously deserving.
All right. Very tough team. Absolutely. And congratulations, you know, on your favorite team. Looking across the rest of the injury front for a moment, we got Stanley remaining sidelined. Don't know when he's going to be back. And it seems like Harbaugh goes through almost a set of stages himself. When he first wants to talk about an injury, it's always the most positive possible outcome that gets talked about. You know, for Lamar, it was going to be days to weeks. For Stanley, it's going to be he might play this week, and I don't know how many consecutive times that was the case. Now he's finally down to we'll see with Ronnie.
Yeah.
I don't know what to take from this when he talks about Lamar in terms of expectations. Do you get that same sense, or do you have a different feeling about it, or do you not even bother listening to Harbaugh?
I mean, a little bit of both from in terms of I don't bother because I also, to be honest with you, I also have a little bit of an issue with the responsibility or the requirement to constantly update when the information is still developing.
Yeah, and not only developing, it's secret. And there are reasons why you should want to withhold and deny what's going on to a certain degree. There's all kinds of motivational reasons, both for the player and the rest of the team, why you wouldn't want everybody to think Lamar's not playing for, you know, the rest of the regular season, if you even knew that was the case right now.
Yeah, and for me personally, like I would have a hard time judging or formulating any opinion on our process, because like this is the only team I pay attention to. So I couldn't the only other team that I have any knowledge of how they handle injuries and announcements of injuries is the Patriots, because they got so much negative attention for some of the things they did that were secretive, like you just alluded to. And I cannot lie and say that on some level, for the coaching staffs and the organizations that are secretive, I commend them for that. You know, now having said that, ultimately it's the health that matters most. And for Stanley, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in Cleveland. I'm not sure that we see him in Pittsburgh. Lord knows we definitely need him.
Yeah, it really makes all the difference, Tim. I think you could probably make the argument, although I probably wouldn't, that Stanley versus the other options is an even bigger chasm than Lamar versus Huntley. Although I think there's Huntley is beloved in this town right now in ways that I don't think are really particularly realistic. I mean, we've had a fair amount of Tyler Huntley that we've actually seen on the field. He led the team to a 91-yard touchdown drive. That's terrific. He also didn't play all that well generally in the game, and he certainly didn't play all that well last season.
Yeah, I think Stanley versus whoever else has been in there has been, you know, really, I would agree that it's as big of a chasm or as big of a gap in some ways. The only thing is, I would say that Huntley can at least execute our three-step drop pass game, mm-hmm. You know, and he can clearly obviously hand the ball off and run a little bit. Those other guys, I think that when we have not had Ronnie Stanley in the lineup, that actually limits our offense a little more in terms of effectiveness than Huntley being in there, which I think is kind of what you were saying. It's a huge loss. And we saw it when he came back suddenly this year. And I think other people saw it. I have alluded to it on video in videos multiple times, maybe even the last time on your show. Trey Hendrickson was the guy who I watched his reaction after the second or third pass rush against Ronnie Stanley in week 5, I believe. And he kind of turned and looked at Stanley, and he didn't talk any shit, because normally Trey Hendrickson is talking the entire time, and he knew this is different. And I think we saw how different it was when he was out, obviously, you know, last year. And it's a huge loss. Hopefully he's able to come back. I would say I would expect him back in Cleveland. If he's back in Pittsburgh, that would surprise me a little bit. But Lamar, I don't think we see in either game.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're probably correct. But hopefully this is not a long term. The Ravens really need to win at least one, and they'd really like to win two of their divisional games that are not Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So that's a very tall order at this point. It's just an extraordinarily tall order. I don't think they'll be favored in any of the games. Maybe yep. Pittsburgh at home, but I don't even know that. So it's going to be a tough road to hoe. Let's move on a little bit, though, because we can't belabor the injuries forever. Greg Roman has been the other big topic of the week. The potential offer coming through at Stanford, and we don't know exactly where that sits right now. He's certainly getting hung in effigy in this town for the Prochet interception call in particular. And Harbaugh not mincing words to talk about, you know, we'd like to have that one back.
Yeah, the timing of it was horrible. Because, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, now I have my second laptop opened up so I have my drive possessions. But the timing of it was terrible. Now, the concept of a trick play against the Broncos was not. They were set up totally for a trick play. And I identify that in the week beforehand because they react so heavy. And they're fast. They're a fast defense. So they react so heavy. Okay, so I got it as our ninth possession. And we're down 9-3. And to me, it looks like about a 10-play drive, maybe 9-play drive, where we convert a 4th-and-2 out of empty with Huntley running. And then we get down to their 29. It's 2nd-and-7. I don't see that as a situation for a trick play. When you're establishing that you can move the ball, that's my problem with it. My problem isn't the play, the design. You know, Prochet throws the ball too late. The ball should have been thrown to catch at about the 7, something like that. That ball should be thrown to catch. You know, we call it a hole shot, you know, over top of the corner, outside of the safety in a cover 2. I don't know that it was exactly a cover 2. It was thrown too late. So horrible execution. I just think I don't like the play call in that situation at all. Our philosophy, if we were going to do a trick play against someone who was set up for it, was like a sudden change. First play of the quarter, first play of a possession, when we don't think we're able to move the ball against them. In this case, we were not playing well offensively, clearly, but on this possession, we're down at the 29, and a touchdown gives us the lead. I thought it was a horrible choice to make the play call. And for Harbaugh to say that, and I support Jim Harbaugh, I mean, I do, but for him to say that, you've got a headset on, dude. You know, you hear your headset's set up. I know how it's set up. You've got a button. You can switch over to offense and defense, and you can hear the call. You're not listening to the defense when the offense is on the field, coach, because there's no need to. So he knew the call before the play.
But if you preempt that call, you would need to call timeout, and the headset gets cut off at 15 seconds, right, at the NFL level?
For the quarterback.
Yeah, so you're right. But if you want to preempt the call, you got to get that to the quarterback. So
yeah, for the quarterback, it's cut off. But for the coaches, it would be – and that's the type of thing, at least in my experience, which is obviously nowhere near that, is that it's a discussion before the drive. Okay, so you're struggling moving the ball. You're down 9-3. Hey, we might use the trick play on this drive. Okay, fine. There is no way that there wasn't discussion of that trick play, at least some quick communication, mm-hmm. at some point during that drive prior to that play. It didn't just suddenly pop up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I you know what, they've got a couple of those scripted, maybe, because they have practiced those plays. You don't, you know, run a double reverse like that and, you know, have Prochet ready to throw a pass without having practiced that play during the week. And
yep.
Prochet should have also, I think, under those circumstances, known what to look for. And
yep.
Four defenders perfectly surrounding that receiver was not the ideal situation to throw the ball. So some of it is on Prochet.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And if you're going to, and you have to tell the kid or the player, hey, we're not used to you throwing the ball. That's why I like the design of it from the standpoint of Prochet's right-handed, like 83% of the population. So he's moving to his right. So if you're going to miss the throw, you miss it toward the sideline or even out of bounds. So that it's the miss, quote unquote, like in golf, you know, is safe for us. I still don't like the call. So like an incomplete pass puts us at 3rd-and-7 from the 29. So to me, it's a call that And the execution, yeah, Prochet executed it poorly, no doubt. The ball's got to be thrown quicker. By the way, one thing I will say, that play was installed last week. That play, you can tell with Duvernay and the timing of him and Prochet, watch it, the timing isn't clean.
Yep.
You know, that it might not have been installed last week, but it was trick. Certain trick plays that you use have to be installed in training camp. And they have to be things that you touch on every week. So when you need, you don't know when you're going to need them, right? You can't anticipate that. Now you get to a week against the Broncos like this, and you, anyone with any experience can look at the Broncos defense on film and say they react to the first thing they see. The first route they see, the first flow they see, they react to it and they commit, which is wonderful. But they're set up for a trick play or a reverse or something. So anyone could see that. But that situation was the wrong situation to do it, number one. And number two, it wasn't clean because we just installed it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. And when you think about what installing means, you don't have a lot of time to practice plays. First of all, you're only going to run that play once against your own defense during the week. And then you might run it again as a walkthrough play, which means, you know, that's a half speed. If you can explain, Coach, what a walkthrough play is.
Yeah, I mean, walkthroughs, you're like, if you're going to install something the first practice day of the week, which for high school is usually a Monday, for the Ravens is usually what, Wednesday? Mm-hmm. It's going to be an installed, and that's probably even more meetings than anything for them. It's going to be installed in the meeting room on the whiteboard, you know, on or video. Like, you're going to say, hey, this is a play that such and such used at Georgia, and we're going to look at doing this. Hey, this is James, this is you, Duve, this is you, et cetera, et cetera. It just didn't look clean, and the walkthrough install is on air. You know, it's on air. You know, and maybe you put a coach back there as the safety that you're reading or you're looking to react off of. And believe me, I know that. I've been that safety personally, you know, for high school teams before, where, you know, the coach is like, hey, you do this, and the kid reacts this way. So you know what to do to try to simulate for the kid without putting any of your kids out there on the defense and wasting their time just standing there, you know. And then doing it live against our defense, I bet it wasn't done once.
Oh, you bet it wasn't done even as a practice play during a segment or anything? Because
I mean, a practice play, yeah, but against our defense in a live situation, no.
Okay. All right. But you don't think it was done in an 11-on-11 during practice pre-walkthrough is what you're saying. You're saying it went from whiteboard to walkthrough.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then you would practice it on the field. You know, they would practice it on the field. They'd probably stop like 11-on-11 or, you know, what I call team and say, all right, you know, defense, you get water. And then we're going to run a couple of trick plays here and put a practice squad guy out there at safety or whoever else. I just don't feel like you're going to waste reps on something you're starting. You're talking about starting defense.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, I think if you show it to your own starting defense, they don't know it's installed. The offense knows it's installed, but the defense doesn't know it's installed.
Try to get a reaction.
So, yeah, right. Get their reaction out of it. And then the second time you run it is in walkthrough. And a walkthrough, you're not really wasting a rep because everybody's moving at half speed. As they're already playing this ridiculous game with each other of I can move faster while walking than you kind of thing.
We used to call it Thursday heroes. Yeah. Guys that are a hero on Thursday, the day before the game, you know, because they're going at 82% and everybody else is going at 50. And that's why I say, to be honest with you, in a lot of those situations, we just remove that. We would just go on air. You know, we were looking for pace and tempo and ability to move quickly on air. I don't know. To me, it looks like something that was installed last week. It doesn't look like something. Well, we've never seen it before, have we?
No. And I'm completely buying what you're saying. The on air thing, I wanted to ask one more question about, though. If you did it, quote unquote, on air, would you still tell the offense, we're going to show you two back end defenders here and it's going to be these two coaches?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. That's what we did. Yep.
Okay. So I think that would be a way to do it too.
Let's yeah. And our guys did. It's nothing wrong to, do we run trick plays generally? Do we? I don't think so. Do we?
Not so. I don't think as much as other teams. That's for certain. You know, because Lamar is so slippery himself, mm-hmm. I think you're less likely to try that kind of a thing. You got your most dangerous ball carrier always has the ball to start the play.
Right. Yeah. I look at the Titans, and I don't want to trigger Ravens fans, but the Titans probably, this is a rough estimate here, I would say probably 4 or 5 weeks out of the season, they run a trick play And when I say trick play, I don't mean double reverse pass. I don't mean, you know, some of the more elaborate trick plays you've seen in college. I mean something that's very offbeat, something that's very specific and designed to attack a certain part of the field. Like, I'll give you an example. 2020, the Titans, I think it's week one, they run a play-action throwback to the tight end, which was Smith, who's now with the Patriots.
Jonnu Smith.
And that...
Jonnu Smith. I'm sorry.
Good player. Good player. Guy that had a touchdown catch against us in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They run and they run it, and he's told to make it look like he falls down. That's a very specific thing, mm-hmm. and it's done to take the safety's eyes away from him and basically check him off. Like, oh nope, I don't need to worry about him. And they do that four or five times a year. We never do it, and that showed up during this game. When we tried to do it, we didn't execute it.
Yeah, I think another good example with the Titans they did in the playoffs was they had Henry throw a short touchdown pass, right? So mm-hmm. you get the ball near the goal line for Henry. It might have been a 3-yard or 2-yard line yep. or whatever. He handed off, the whole defense is, of course, drawn into him, and then he had a nice, easy pitch and catch, leaping pitch and catch, actually, in the back of the end zone. So
pass like Tebow used to do at Florida. Yeah, yep, great, great point. And we just don't do those things. So – yes, were the Broncos set up for it? Absolutely. You know, is it something that a lot of us could look at and say we should run something like that? Yep. But we don't do that, and we don't have those things pre-installed, and we don't show them to you as a defense so that you have to worry about it. That's is that a 20% weakness? No, it's probably just a 2% weakness. Just another chink in the armor of the Greg Roman offense. Another thing that we don't do.
There's a lot of things to point at in this Greg Roman offense, but I am, you know, certainly looking back to 2019, it was one of the greatest offenses of all time with not the greatest personnel of all time.
Agreed.
Okay. And in 2020, they were close to what they were in 2019 before the injury to Ronnie Stanley, and the injury mm-hmm. to Nick Boyle then followed that and made it
horrible,
more difficult. 2021, they were nowhere near, but of course, that was a year of having Alejandro Villanueva at left tackle, and that showed you just how much that can hurt a team to be without their left tackle for a year. They had other problems too. The running backs got hurt at the mm-hmm. same time. I mean, it was a miserable year of injuries generally for that team. I come into this year and my basic hope was that the Ravens could get to about 2.65 points per drive. They are not too far off that right now. As a matter of fact, well, they probably are a little bit off that right now. I got to go actually look at their drive stats right now to see where they are. But now with a 9-point gain, or a 10-point gain, that's certainly going to do it.
Yeah, you could run that before week 13, right, and see what it was?
I probably can. They're at 2.30 points per drive still currently, which is ninth in the NFL. And they would have been in the 2.6 range, I would say, before the Panthers mm-hmm. game, say. So the point I'm making is that the Ravens offense this year, when they had Ronnie Stanley, when they had their pieces in place, was running at the level they need to be a very dominant football team in general.
Agreed.
And so even as much as the general consensus opinion, I think we'd agree, is that Greg Roman is bashed for this offense not producing at an even higher level, but I don't know how people get there.
That's cover.
Yeah.
That's cover for the players that we want to protect and make excuses for.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cover. And that's all of them, including Lamar at times, but Lamar's not the issue, you know, compared to all other guys, but that's cover is what that is. You know, you understand that.
I do.
He deserves some of the criticism. Greg Roman does. You know, again, you don't give you don't give defenses certain things they have to prepare for. I don't remember the last time I saw a reverse. I don't remember it. I don't remember why aren't we running more boot stuff with Lamar that at least pulls someone out of the box? We don't run it. We run a play action.
I've got my answer on that. In terms of boot action, the boot action with a non-mobile quarterback typically very effective because the edge defender is not keyed in on doing what he needs to do. But the most key words that we look at in our offensive line scoring is the number of the edge defender fooled or not fooled. That comment is like one of the first we do zone block left, naked boot right. And then the very first thing we're talking about is whether, you know, 53 is fooled or not fooled on the play, because that it almost always determines whether or not that play is going to be a simple level zero check down right at the line of scrimmage, or whether you're going to have an opportunity for that second or third level throw on the play. And if it's Lamar Jackson, that edge defender, that's what he is trained to do, is make sure Lamar Jackson does not get away from you. If
correct.
Joe Flacco, zone block left, naked boot right, looks like zone block left.
So correct.
You don't worry about it.
But we still complete the pass, though. We've, like, for example, the first play of the season against the Jets was a Z hide concept at a single back. So it's one back, you know, field side right, wide side right, and we boot. Now it's a short completion to Bateman, but we've run that concept by my count 6 times this year with one guy in the backfield, and it's not the hide concept all the time, which hide is just, you know, a tight end or a receiver from one side going behind the offensive line to the other side out in the flats. But we've run that concept numerous times, I think 6 times, and the guys, I think we're 5 for 6 throwing on that. And or the other converse of that is, yeah, I don't disagree with you that the D end, you know, on the backside, I would say the backside is going to go at Lamar. I don't disagree with that, but it's designed to open up the run game, which it accomplishes if the backside edge defender is going to the quarterback. It's a one for, it's just like chess. You know what I mean? Just trade one for one here. You know, I still think there's so many things that we don't do. And I would be more comfortable with some people's criticism of Greg Roman if they identified those things. It's just often a blanket criticism with, not you, I'm talking about fans and social media stuff that I've probably muted 40% of the people I follow on social media anyway. They just don't know it. Not block, because then they know, mute, then they don't know. Give a specific reason, you know, give a specific thing that they do, and then I'll listen. Otherwise, I'm not going to listen.
Right. I think that's an excellent way to approach it. I'm not saying the mute thing. I probably wouldn't do that, but then I end up with too many people in my timeline, and sometimes then I miss a response that I should be making. But
yeah.
I understand your point, and it is right. People need to get specific, and when you ask people to get specific, very quickly their level of understanding about the thing becomes very clear.
Yeah, and that's partially not their fault. I mean, for real, there's a lot of people who have not been given or blessed with certain experiences, like a lot of us have, to have people instruct them. And have people show them, you know, literally sit down and meet for 2 hours or whatever. Hey, this is what this is. This is how you stop it. This is how you teach it, et cetera. But that content is out there. And I'm not just talking about me. You know, all the other Ravens content creators, people are delving deep into things that we are doing well, things that we're not doing well, things that are great calls and we just didn't execute, you know, like the week before, you know, the game in Jacksonville, offensively. We were in position to score 35 points. Players didn't execute, period. The game that was called, the concepts that were called, we had an opportunity to score 35 points if we catch the football, if we throw the football, if where it's supposed to be thrown, and we hit the receivers in stride. So it's not that simple that it's Greg Roman every week, because against Jacksonville, it just was not.
We got to pick up the pace a little bit here, but I want to go back to the Jacksonville game in this next point and say one of the complaints was that the plays were getting in too slow, and obviously Lamar was getting very frustrated by it. But we saw Huntley in this game, and it clearly it's been a point of emphasis during the week to improve the time at the line of scrimmage. They ran some no huddle, and you know did so fearlessly when Huntley was in there. You know, even though he had just replaced Lamar, and. I did not see that as a problem at all in this game.
Yeah, it disappeared, right? Mm-hmm.
Do you think there a component of this that is Lamar? Like, does Lamar have trouble translating a play call in the huddle for the players?
I can't imagine that. I mean, first of all, NFL play calls are way too long. They are way too long. Some of the terminology, it's ridiculous. You know, they're literally saying a phrase or, you know, for each or a syllable for each player. There should be a way for you as a coach to have the plays communicated in a manner that doesn't require 17 words or 13 words or whatever it is. You know, so I've dealt with some kids who needed things whittled down for them. Let's put it that way. And you had to figure out a way. High school coaches do a great job. Not just football, of being able to communicate things to their kids in a concise way, because those kids are their brains are dealing with 7 classes per day, so they've got a lot of terminology being, you know, jammed down their throat every day, and you have to try to figure out a way to carve out some space for your concepts. NFL coaches, if you ask me, do a horrible job of that. I apply zero blame to Lamar for this other that reason and this other reason. The play's coming in late. Like, it's coming in late. Now, there is an elephant in the room there that a lot of Ravens fans might not want to hear about. It's possible that our coaching staff recognize, I mean, think about the two main storylines for this season: blown leads in the fourth quarter where our defense can't stop people. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one of the storylines, I guess, could be, you know, us getting the play in late and having some delay of game penalties. I think 3 times this year we've been down around the 15 and gotten a delay. And you may know that it's more than that. I'm not sure. That seriously impacts your ability to score a touchdown when you're at the 15 and you get a delay, right?
I mean, you're always at risk of a stalled drive. A pre-snap penalty is less serious than a post-snap penalty. We'd agree on that. But absolutely, yes, any penalty is a risk of a stalled drive.
In the red zone. Is you know, we're already there.
Probably more, yes.
We're already there. I mean, if we get a penalty on the negative 32, we don't know that we had a chance to score on that drive. We don't know that we had a high chance. If we're in the red zone, we understand that we have a high chance.
Good point.
So anyway, the elephant in the room that I refer to is this. Maybe our coaches know or understand that we're prone to blow leads because we aren't that talented in the defensive backfield. We aren't as talented. Maybe they understand that, and that's why they're trying to run clock and shorten the game. I'm not saying I believe that. I'm just saying when I heard Greg Roman come out and say it, that they were trying to bleed clock, to me that sounds like a coaching staff that's trying to shorten the game to limit opportunities for a more talented team to beat you. That's a football concept that's been, you know, being utilized for decades.
It's actually I heard it too, and I thought it was one of the most self-damning comments that I'd heard from Roman. And most of the time, Roman appears to let water run off his back with regard to everyone basically treating him like crap. But in that particular case, I said, that's not a good thing that he would say that, because you don't believe that. I don't think he really believes it even for a second. He can say, yeah, we shortened the game by 4 minutes. What's really important is you run more plays than your opponent. That's how you get a team tired. It's not time of possession. It's you run more plays. Now, there are times in the game where your main goal should be to get the game over with. And that's when you make negative expected points plays to give you positive expected wins plays. That's a concept that not enough fans really get. I know you do, but not enough fans really get. And I think the Ravens at some point have approached, you know, 4-minute football with 10 minutes to go that way. And I got no problem with that. That's the Ravens' strength, is to grind out a football game. Then you do it. Short passes, no really long shots down the field. Fantastic. Do it that way. If you're a team that can consistently get 4 first downs a drive, then, you know, you're obviously in position to do that kind of thing. But the fact that Roman would say that out loud, you would never indict the defense in that way. And I think there was an element of that, and it sounded like exactly what you talked about earlier, cover, probably for himself in this particular case, to say, no, we meant to do that. It's like Pee Wee Herman falling off the bicycle.
Yeah, I didn't think there was any way to spin that in a way that makes sense to say out loud. Like there's 1,000 things said in coaches' meetings and out on the practice field that they're not going to repeat for us. Right. That's just the way it is, you know, but that was one that I don't know how you spin that and justify saying that out loud.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how you do that. I understand what was probably the overall or overriding point there, which is, you know, let's try to limit the amount of damage our defense can do to us, particularly like when we've had, you know, when Marlon was hurt against Miami and out for like 16 plays in a row or whatever. Or I think we had 2 weeks where he was questionable or something like that. Because like the moment he comes off the field, we are a completely different defense. And you see the same thing when Kyle Hamilton comes off the field. We're a completely different defense.
You meant Humphrey, not Lamar, with the first thing, right?
Oh, yeah, my bad. Yeah, Humphrey, my bad. Well, they're equivalent. You know, and
Humphrey is the Lamar of the defense.
Exactly. I mean, he is just, you know, if we had become sellers this year, with, let's say, for whatever reason, we were sellers at the trading deadline, I cannot imagine that Marlon Humphrey wouldn't have brought back a tremendous amount of draft capital because of Marlon Humphrey turned some of these other teams in the NFL's defenses into shutdown defenses because of his ability. He's just so – we're very blessed to have him.
Yeah, he's a terrific player. Unfortunately, the Ravens couldn't have traded him this year because they didn't have the cap to trade him, even if they wanted to. So, you know, you're often in that position. We need to kind of move the show along a little bit here. I'm going to go through a few statistical comments here, and then we'll kind of maybe talk over all of them. The Ravens really never got started in this game with Lamar Jackson. 6 pass plays for 1 yard with him in there. They did not have third down success. He had a great streak going of 9 consecutive games of 40% plus on third down. This was 3 for 13 in this game. That's really Huntley. Lamar made his contribution to not converting third downs before he left, but it's really Huntley who was the primary ender there. And that's a shame because that's the longest streak in team history.
There's going to be a lot of possessions with him where I think we're going to be in 3rd and 4. You know, because we're going to be in a short pass focus. But, you know, teams are going to adjust. It's like I think Stacey Van Diver said to me today in a message. He said, no, you know, Tyler Huntley's going to get someone's game plan now. You know, someone's going to game plan for him. And certainly, like, the Broncos were playing soft split field coverages, you know, staying back, keeping everything in front. So the short pass game was there for him. There will be situations where people strategically or tactically decide to take that away.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that that Huntley really does is allow the defense to totally collapse on the offense. And with an offense like the Ravens that's trying to spread the line of scrimmage horizontally, that's a really big deal because plays don't have the same amount of time to develop. You know, your run plays even that you wanted to have time to develop, even if they're draws, you know, even if, you know, a draw play takes time to develop, a read play in some ways takes time to develop. But, you know, his pocket awareness is such that your pass plays you're having a much more predominantly short pass and boot set of concepts you're working with, get them out of the pocket quickly. Your run plays have to be a lot of quick hitters. I wish they would go back to running more power under these circumstances, because I think zone concepts will actually be yet less useful.
Yeah,
with what they've got, I think it's going to be too much penetration.
I like to see them mix. I like when they mix the gap schemes and the zone schemes together. It's always created so much conflict in my mind. But then again, you know, my understanding is limited compared to the people that run things at the NFL level, obviously. But it's so much conflict for us to read as linebackers when it's gap schemes versus zone schemes. I wish that we mixed them a little more, especially because we have 2, maybe even 3 guys on the inside there that are so good on zone schemes or even stretch stuff. And I think Moses is a better stretch blocker than gap schemes as well.
Yeah, you know, that is an odd concept. I mean, I don't think he's been bad this year in terms of down blocking, going to level 2. He's actually shown up with a lot of level 2 blocks, but he's the only one to me who really looks comfortable in a keep your pace right zone movement.
Oh, yeah.
He has a big body, first of all, so that helps. He has long arms, that helps. But McCary, I've seen him, you know, just last week, he got way out in front of a zone play and allowed a penetration behind him. Big no-no.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's slow.
Yeah, it just got different. They're moving at 5 different speeds, and you want to move, you know, all basically at the same speed in a zone concept. So, I'm not sure the Ravens are really made for it. I do know that they can still run a lot of these dual concepts, a lot of the double inside double teams, and make things happen. It's just another thing they actually need out of that is a quarterback who's actually a dangerous threat on a read play.
Yeah,
and I Huntley, you know, you're going from a 7 yard a carry read guy to a 4 yard a carry, you know, runner, and he's just not nearly as dangerous. Not going to make as frequent good reads as Lamar does.
That's what's so hard to hear. Like, well, you don't if you're, you know, you're at the game. I know you go to a lot of them, but the announcers are like, oh, these guys have similar skill sets. What? What? Have you seen Lamar Jackson run? I mean, have you seen? You know, and now granted, Tyler Huntley's made some big runs, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, especially even last year in the last 4 or 5 games of the year, he had some big runs in certain situations, but it's not the same. You know, it's like a guy who hits 42 home runs a year, Lamar, if in case anyone doesn't understand, every year, and a guy who hits, you know, 25, 26 most years, and occasionally hits 33. Yeah, that's a good number. Don't get me wrong, but it's not the same skill set. It's not, and I really like Tyler Huntley.
I think that's a great analogy. I was going to give another one. Is basically I'm the same quarterback Peyton Manning is, because one, I'm tall. I'm not tall for an NFL player, but I'm tall for a human being. Second, I love to stand in the pocket because there's no way I can move out of it, particularly my age. And number three, I want to get rid of the ball very quickly. You're right. The Tyler Huntley comparison is a stylistic similarity without being a quality similarity.
Yeah, and then also too, there's the dynamic of the plays are called different for Huntley. Well, he does do one thing drastically different from Lamar, and you can use the word better if you want. I frankly don't care. He gets rid of the ball quicker. That's just a fact. He's willing to throw the short passes and get the ball out. And Lamar, that's just not Lamar's focus. And me personally, as a huge Lamar fan, that's not an easy thing for me to say. Like, I want to be able to say that every attribute Lamar has is a 95 or higher. In terms of taking the short passes, it's just not. Tyler Huntley gets rid of the ball quicker than he does. He's willing to take the single, whereas Lamar wants a double or a triple.
I want to react to that because I agree with your comment in terms of qualitatively what the difference is between the two players. But I would say it's not a weakness. It's a difference in style that plays to his abilities in Lamar's case. When Lamar's time to throw is very high, he's extremely effective. And that usually means he's being slippery, moving out of the pocket, extending plays. Doesn't necessarily mean he's not getting some pressure. But when he can extend plays, he is a dangerous, dangerous cat. Huntley needs to have the ball schemed out of his hands by the coaches.
That's why they spread it for him. Absolutely, yes. That's why it makes sense. And that's why I don't have a problem with the offense, quote, looking different. Which some people do. But having said that, there's two situations in the game the other day before Lamar went out where one of them, and I know you've seen. I mean, Duve is absolutely wide open in the left flats for Lamar to throw the ball to. And he's got to work through the progression faster. And I hate to say this, I know you weren't thinking about me saying this, but if Tyler Huntley is the quarterback on that play, the ball is thrown to Duve, and it's a 20-25 yard game.
That's probably a very valid point. I'm not gonna say that one is better or one is.
No, I hate that conversation. It's a stupid conversation.
But yeah, any player, if you can't see any way in which they could be better, you're probably not looking hard enough.
Exactly. I also feel like there's a clear indication that we are not focused on the short passing game with Lamar because we're not spreading the field horizontally. I think you kind of alluded to it earlier. We're not spreading the field horizontally for him already. You look at, I call it flex, or just, some people call it spread, just a 2x2 set, mm-hmm. quarterback in the shotgun, whatever people want to call it. Some people call it spread.
But not empty. 2x2, one back, yeah. Not empty.
Yep. Exactly. 2x2. And we're in that a lot. I'm going through my formations. I'm just scrolling on my screen right now. On Ravens stuff. Well, we're in some 12. I actually liked our 12 personnel the other day, to be honest with you. There was two run plays out of our 12 personnel that shocked me, meaning Ricard's not on the field. But yeah, the offense looks different with Huntley, and I guess, it kind of should, like you said, to play to his strengths.
Just counting this up right now, 23 times the Ravens lined up four wide with either one back or one tight end. Only one of those was a one tight end situation. So you're right on the money. And that has been something that people have been tossing cover for Lamar on this week is does Lamar see this and see all of the extra receivers granted to Huntley and think, boy, my offense could be more efficient. They just have to get me weapons and let me play out a spread like this. I don't think that's the way to get the most out of Lamar, but everybody who wants to be an offensive coordinator or thinks they are an offensive coordinator wants to talk about how bad the scheme is and why the scheme is doing. It is not a positive for Tyler Huntley that they spread the offense in the way they do. It is an accommodation for Tyler Huntley.
Yeah, I like to think that And I kind of said this in the offseason, you know, and I would never disparage Pat Ricard because, you know, this is a whole nother conversation. But when you can do what we do with Pat Ricard, you can do it. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I really like our 12 personnel because our the problem is neither one of our tight ends, Mark Andrews or Josh Oliver or likely, can do what Ricard does. What we need is a tight end who can do that occasionally so we can operate out of 12 personnel, which can be 11 in terms of a formation, because likely Andrews and to a lesser extent Oliver have, you know, pass catching abilities, but you need someone to be able to block if you're going to run split zone, you know, what I call split zone, inside zone to the right and the H-back kicking out to the left. That would be where we would want to go, because then Lamar could have spread formations, spread personnel, and condensed formations with the same guys on the field. You wouldn't need to be so sub heavy. I think that would help Roman with the getting the plays in on time as well, because you wouldn't be subbing as much. When you look at our drive charts, which I know you have as well, typically it goes like this, you know, from a personnel standpoint, 12, 12, 11, 22, 12, 13, 22, you know, it varies, you know, and yeah, that is the complaint that a lot of people don't talk about enough. Because that's the reason why we're taking so long, is because we're subbing in people and then we're getting the play.
Yeah. So, and you have to know the play usually to know the subgroup. I mean, maybe exactly. The case of that Roman actually calls the group and then he goes to the play kind of thing. But either way, he might be stalling himself. You constrain yourself to a certain set of plays when you leave your personnel on the field and just try and run no huddle. You make it easier to get that play in quicker. Obviously, you're going to get the line of scrimmage quicker because it's part of no huddle, as you don't want the defense subbing. But you really give yourself an opportunity to not fail in that particular way. I do think the Ravens offense runs off kind of a fresh legs concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And when the defense doesn't really have 15 guys that they like to sub through, and I'm talking about primarily at the outside linebacker and defensive line positions being right. Additional four. I think when they only have 14 guys or less, I think that the Ravens really like to go after that and wear that defense down. And yep. And they do it with sub packages, and they do it with, you know, just a lot of mm-hmm. consistent running and blocking with the tight end.
It's a fun issue, to be honest with you, to talk about personnel and the way that it impacts the game, you know, the defense like you just talked about, and the way that it impacts the plays that are called. You know, no doubt, like, there is a reason why we kept Pat Ricard, and there's a reason why we operate the way that we do. In the quote, and I am using air quotes as I say this, in the quote modern game, uh-huh. you know, of football that is not drastically different from the way the game was. People use the word modern game who didn't pay attention to football 20, 30 years ago because they were not born yet. You know, there was the run and there was a thing called the run and shoot, which I know you're aware of, in the 80s and 90s. Which
Oilers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my high school ran the run and shoot, so I understand it, and you know, we even stuck with it some when I was coaching it from a certain standpoint. Like, the modern game has a place for a tight end / fullback guy. We're doing it with a fullback, and in my opinion, I would like to see us do it with a tight end who can occasionally play fullback, and that would be the difference. You know, prior to the draft, I said, you know, I like Jeremy Ruckert, Jake Ferguson, some of the rookies I looked at. You know, I was not anticipating Isaiah Likely, you know, being a guy that we looked at, but having said that, now, prior to his injury, you can correct me if I'm wrong, we had used him at fullback some. I'm thinking of the Saints game.
We're talking about Likely now?
Yep. Yes. Snaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had executed the read that Ricard does out of the option three times this year. So that was surprising to me, because usually it had been Ricard doing that or Boyle pre-injury, and then Andrews occasionally. So we need a tight end who can play fullback so Lamar can have those guys on the field no matter what type of formation we're lining up in.
And if you scare the opposing defensive coordinator more to have a tight end like Likely as opposed to Ricard, because there's yes. more ways Likely obviously can hurt you, whether he's flexed even in line. And we didn't think Likely would be an inline player, but pretty much he's excelled as a blocker now
yes.
in recent weeks, pretty much anywhere they put him.
Absolutely. I was one of those when I did a pre-draft or a post-draft, look at Likely, where I said, you know, he's really struggling to block in college. Mm-hmm. And my buddy Edgar Allen, you know, hit the nail on the head. He said, look, I think he's going to be a better blocker than people are offering. And I didn't agree with that, but he has been. Now, he struggled some early in the year. I think he's adjusted. And, you know, the 12-yard catch that he had on the game-winning drive where he makes the linebacker miss. You know, by the way, that's a linebacker who had 17 tackles Sunday. Mm-hmm. So he clearly can tackle. And Isaiah Likely, I don't even know if he touched Likely. So having a guy on the field like Isaiah Likely as opposed to Ricard, and I love Pat Ricard. How many people have ever played on both sides of the football in the NFL, you know, especially in this day and age? Very few people have done that, you know, probably more so back in the 50s and 60s. You know, so having more Likely on the field and less Ricard, I think, is the way to go. That's why I love 12 personnel.
Yeah, I can buy into that. We got to move the show forward a little bit here. So
sorry, man.
I do want to say a few things. The Broncos only went after Tyler with 4 and 5 on every play. So they really didn't try any extreme rush packages to go after him. It's still pocket awareness for me that is the weakness with the left tackle situation being what it is. And what it means is you can go down a list of all the plays you can run with Lamar, and it's basically the full Ravens playbook because it's built for Lamar. And then you have to take out 35% of those plays because it's Tyler Huntley, because this play takes too long to develop as a pass. You know, this doesn't really work with the way he reads. He's not as good a reader as Lamar, so we can't ask him to make that read against an air player, you know, an unblocked defensive end I'm talking about now.
Yeah. I will say this. I loved the throw to Drake because he worked through. I know that he worked through three progressions there, right to left, and then came back. I don't think he's really looking at Oliver, so I really am not counting Oliver. And then he threw it to what is really the fifth option. So he went right to left, snag flat, and then the over concept from Andrews. Like, I can't remember a play from this year where we have gone through four parts of the progression and then completed the pass. That's what I liked about it. Just competing and working through everything. You know, and of course it was a little bit of ad lib. The number 99 could have easily rushed the passer instead of going for the pump fake, you know, no doubt. But he went through all the progressions. Like, that's the type of progression that you do on air, you know, with no defenders, and the coach is saying, oh, this is how you work through the progression. Except he did it in the 60th minute of an NFL football game where we hadn't scored a touchdown yet. Pretty damn impressive.
Great play. Certainly won the game for the Ravens. It was more important, I think, than any play on that drive, the 13-yard. Maybe not. Maybe the, you know, one to Andrews at the drew the penalty also was more important. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was the play. But I'm going to take the other side of this for a second, Coach, and just, you know, let me go a little bit. Give me a little rope on this one. he definitely did go through some reads, and then he got flushed left. Okay, flushed left for a right-handed NFL quarterback is death. Okay, I always prefer, and this is from years of watching Joe Flacco, for that ball never to be thrown. Now, Lamar certainly has more upper body turn than Flacco, and also more speed to get his feet reset. We didn't see a foot reset out of Huntley there. And so this was like a long three-pointer being taken where I go, no, yes, he made it, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That ball had all kinds of chances to be intercepted. I mean, Huntley is not that accurate a thrower. He happened to find a space where there were no defenders. Drake happened to have the awareness to go get the football properly, and then still make a play after he caught the ball, which was really great play by Drake. But boy, I wish that ball had not been thrown.
If Singleton, the linebacker, isn't hustling, that's a touchdown. You know, he's the guy that saved it. I just love the fact, and when I saw it live, I didn't appreciate it as much until like later that night, and I thought, you know, because I track the offensive plays by concept, and I have a database that, you know, I can look at all the instances of snag flat. So snag flat is the outside receiver running an angled hook, you know, at 5 to 6, 7 yards. And then the inside receiver, which was in this case was Ricard. He was a slot tight end, you know, running into the flats, and you're reading reading someone, you know, is the flat defender going to be open or is the snag open? I have that being run by us like 37 times this year. Not one time that, and I looked at it. This is why I thought it was a unique play. Mm-hmm. Not one time have I ever seen us go off a snag flat and then to another read. Now, personally, I think Mark Andrews is open in the middle of the field. Like, I think if it's Lamar, he probably throws to Andrews in the middle of the field. But here's the larger point for me. If it's Lamar, is he focused on Andrews initially in the first place? And is one of the defenders more so leveraged toward Andrews than the snag flat, which in my opinion is where the read is supposed to be? And that's why I'm saying that that's why I love the play, because he goes snag flat, which is 1-2, you know, to Andrews in the middle of the field, which I still think he could have thrown, but he didn't want to try to squeeze it through there. I don't think he really, and this is all right to left, you know, this is all right to left. I don't think he gets to Oliver. I don't think he really takes a serious look at Oliver. And then comes back to Drake, who would be, you know, option five naturally if we just do the math. That's the and I didn't see that ever from us this year. But of course, if it was Lamar, he could have, you know, scrambled for that 13-yard gain and not risked throwing the ball between the two levels of the defense.
Yeah, even with Lamar's long time to throws, he rarely gets to a fifth read because a run becomes, first of all, run becomes available before then. But second of all, the pocket gets moved before then, which means a lot of your regular reads don't look the same.
Yeah,
as you expect. So he's already trying to find an extended play read at that point. But yeah, the other point is very good about he'd have been focused on Andrews and he probably would have thrown that ball and maybe the defense reacts differently to it. It's a point well taken.
I think Huntley is a guy who will just, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, he will run the system that they ask him to run. Not that Lamar will not, but Huntley will run the read, the exact read that he's supposed to, irrespective of, you know, probably how the defense lines up. Why? Because he doesn't have as many snaps in the NFL as Lamar does. Lamar has enough snaps to walk up and say, okay, well, I know the read is here, but I see the coverage, what the coverage is, so I understand that those first two parts of the read are probably not open anyway because of what they're doing defensively. Huntley doesn't have that experience, and I think that's a further limiting factor for Huntley is that he hasn't seen, if we were talking about math pre-show, you and I, he hasn't seen enough equations to understand how to quickly adapt, you know, based on where it's going to go. So that's another limiting factor besides the athleticism that you referred to earlier.
Right. All right. Run through a few more statistical things, and we got to close up this first part of the show here. They only gave the combination of Huntley and Lamar six ample time and space opportunities. One of those went to Prochet on the interception. That's only 18% of the total passes. The Ravens offensive line in this game really did not get it done. There were 13 other ball out quick opportunities. There's 39% of the plays. Those only went for 4.7 yards per play, even though 12 out of 13 were completed. Now, the bad thing is 42% of the time, even though they were only rushing four or five every single time, the Broncos were able to get pressure. And actually, Huntley had a pretty good game against those. He completed 10 of 12 for 77 yards. And 5.5 yards per play on those plays. Didn't turn the ball over, though he was sacked twice on those plays. But, the point I'm making with all this is that the opportunity set that Huntley had was not that great in this game.
Yeah, there's a cap. It would be a low, if you were to look at just the way the defense played, there's a low ceiling on the output that we would expect Huntley to produce. I think that's what you mean.
Yeah, it is, and he outperformed it in some ways. But you know, to look at some of the next gen stats numbers, the time to throw was 2.69 yard seconds per play. That's really short. It'd be super short for Lamar. It was 20th out of 30 quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
Completed air yards 3.9 per play. So
yeah, all short stuff, all in front of the defense. Yeah,
totally in front of the defense. And intended air yards only 5.8, 28th out of 30 in the NFL. So that's down at the Garoppolo level of. Probably shouldn't even tease 49ers fans at this point because there is a lower level.
Going to be a very interesting matchup because of some of the half field coverages that the Steelers play. The Steelers play a lot of split field coverages. They're very multiple. And this is going back to LeBeau, you know, 90s, you know, LeBeau. They play a lot of split field coverages where they're jumping certain routes and people are like, oh, he jumped that. No, it's a read. You know, it's a read. It's predetermined in terms of who the safety and corner are reading. If you think, and I can do this in the second segment if you wish, but if you think back to the 2020 game up there, remember Joe Hayden had a pick six on RG3 inside of our own red zone. That was what's called two read. So he's reading the number two receiver, and he's the corner, obviously Hayden. And if the number two receiver runs out, he's jumping that. He's taking that out now from the corner. So he's releasing number one to the safety. That's a read. That's not a, I'm going to make a play here. That doesn't happen as often in the NFL as people think. Mm-hmm. later on that game, if you recall, RG3 got hurt. McSorley came in. The Ravens set the Steelers up. They lined up in the same formation, the same exact side. Why? Because they knew the Steelers were going to play two read. And Hayden jumps it, and what does McSorley do? He hits Marquise Brown for the 74-yard touchdown that got us back in the game. I know you remember it because you pay COVID game. Exquisite, attention. My point in saying that is the Steelers are going to do things to try to take away the few options that Huntley has. And then now Greg Roman and the Ravens offensive staff have to do things. Okay, we know the Steelers. Let's not walk in there and act like we don't know they play two read and they're not going to jump a 5 yard out, but with the corner. You know what I mean? We understand that's what they do. Let's manipulate them and let's attack the things they do specifically. And they've done for 30 years out of that defense. I know that it's different coaches there, but let's be honest. That is still a Dick LeBeau system being run there with a lot of the same coverages, especially to one side of the field, especially to the offense's right, the defense's left.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding stuff, Coach. Man, this is a great show. We didn't get through nearly the whole bullet point list, but we'll cover a lot of these in the second part of this show. Really appreciate having your expertise and the offensive encyclopedia that you bring to the table when we're talking football here. And you've shown me a little bit of what's in your database, but why don't you talk a little bit about where people could talk to you online and find your work?
All 22 films on Twitter and all 22 films on YouTube. The actual address for the Twitter one is I don't know how to change it. Like somebody who's Twitter savvy or not a Twitter noob like me, help me out. I made it all 22 NFL cuts initially and then changed the front name, but the at symbol is still, very laborious for people to type, but it's all 22 films. And then the database is just something that I try to do the same thing you do, which is just track as many plays as possible for multiple reasons. For my own usage, I've offered it to other content creators as well. Like, hey, if you want to use this, take advantage of it, to help you, keep track of. Because I'm imagining that there's other people out there like myself who are trying to track it. Why are 8 or 10 different people separate of each other tracking the same data? To me, it makes more sense for people to work together and have group access to it, number one. But another reason why it helps me out is in the off season to create videos, on a random Tuesday, I can just go, hey, let me go find the 37 instances of us running snag flat and see 32 of these times we're running it to our right. I wonder why that is. Well, we have a right-handed quarterback. So what is, and the impact that can have on a defense. So, and in terms of us not covering as much in the first half, that's all my fault, not yours.
No, well, I'm not blaming anybody. We have great conversations. And believe me, it's not just you. It's pretty much every guest I have because, first of all, I get great people on the show, which is terrific. But second of all, I can't keep my mouth shut either. So, we go back and forth on topics. And hopefully this is stuff that people really appreciate. I know they really appreciated when you were on the first time, Coach. So this is the kind of thing that I want to have you on more. We have to get some of these connection issues got it figured out. And really appreciate that we've got a good one tonight.
Well, it's you're doing what you're supposed to be doing right now, and that's why it comes out in your show. And the people you have on are passionate about the Ravens and passionate about football. So, those situations are not forced at all. It's smooth, and it's people who enjoy talking football enjoy talking to you about football, and your listeners enjoy listening to them. So it's all smooth and it's all good. So I appreciate you having me on.
Well, absolutely. You're welcome many more times. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short, hit me up. I'm up to talk football with anybody. Consider me as a call-in talk show, if that's what you want to think of me as. Hit me up with a DM Twitter. Tell me the topic you're passionate about. We'll discuss it in a short. I'm looking to create some more accessible content to people that might be 20 or 30 minutes instead of the hour and 10. These things always seem to go. I found myself recently on YouTube and watching a lot of 3 and 4 minute Ukraine videos as opposed to the 15 minute Ukraine videos, just because my attention span seems to be shorter. So hopefully, I'm starting to get the message that some shorter content would really help to get the spread better. But then anyway, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Love to hear from you. Coach, we'll come back in part two in a minute, but thank you very much.
Appreciate it, man.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Thank you.